close to 65,000 slices of bread and over 41,000 rolls, more than 4,000 pounds of baked beans, and most important, 24,000 pounds of meat. Hungry New Yorkers ate all that and more at last year's Big Apple Barbecue Block Party. And this year's party promises to be even bigger. It begins tomorrow, but today we have a sneak preview of what's cooking in the pits, and the aroma of it is just filling this studio. We're going to have a taste test here, and my fellow taste testers are Danny Meyer, president of the Union Square Hospitality Group, and the host of the Block Party in Madison Square Park, and Southern food experts Matt Lee and Ted Lee, authors of the Lee Brothers Southern Cookbook. I'm very pleased to welcome them and the barbecue to my show today. Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Leonard.
Now, people use the word barbecue to mean many different things. The food itself, the way foods are cooked, even just a backyard party. So how would you define it? I'll begin with you, Danny.
When I was growing up in St. Louis, barbecue meant something pretty simple. It was throwing a hamburger on the grill, and that was barbecuing a hamburger. And I grew up to learn it really meant a whole different thing, which was really following a long-standing American tradition of slow-smoking meats over some type of indirect heat, usually created by wood, but sometimes charcoal, and really trying to do it for as long as you could to break down the meat till it became tender.
So the hamburger and the hot dog are not really barbecue.
That's grilling.
Now, Ted, is Southern-style barbecue the only real barbecue as far as you're concerned?
Oh, yes, Leonard. No, I think that...
Well, can a case be made for Texas? One of my favorite places for barbecue ever was Lone Pine, California. Just had incredible barbecue there.
Matt and I have had incredible barbecue in Hawaii. Danny was just mentioning Hawaii. There are a lot of pit masters out there. Really, you know, it's now become a sort of American phenomenon. Everyone does it, and everyone loves to get really passionate about what the best is. Where Matt and I are from in South Carolina, there are said to be three different barbecue belts, all based on what kind of sauce you put on your smoked pork. And it's, you know, people are passionate about it.
And people take it a step further by almost allying themselves with religions and political parties connected to the sauce they prefer.
True.
Well, many years ago, I went to a party on an Indian reservation where they dug a pit. They put burning wood there. And then they put a whole cow into it and covered the whole thing. And it's slow cooked. And then, I don't know how, a day later, they took it out, skinned the cow, and chopped up the meat. Would that be barbecue?
Certainly. What we're talking about here is cooking proteins. And, I mean, we're almost barbecuing our knees when we sit around a fire. And it's not so far-fetched to think that that back in prehistoric times there was a form of barbecue that would pass muster even today in New York.
Oh, I thought you were leading toward cannibalism.
Oh, yeah, no.
But what happens to meat when you slow cook it? Smoking meat entirely different from barbecuing meat? Or is that, are we saying the same thing here?
Well, there's hot and cold smoking. And I think a lot of us are familiar with the hot smoking of salmon. Salmon is also cold smoked, but certainly tomorrow and this weekend, what we're looking at is mostly the cold smoking, the long, slow, indirect heat. You just separate the firebox from the cooking box with a tube, you know, something just to bring down the temperature and keep the meat away from the intense heat. But you can also put your meat over, you know, a higher heat and more directly over your heat source and get a hotter, quicker smoke on it.
So when we get a slow smoke on it, we're talking about something cooking for how long?
It really depends on what meat you're doing. So ideally, you don't want to ever be above 220 degrees. And so if you're doing ribs, that generally means you're going to be in the vicinity of 5 to 7 hours. If you're doing a brisket or a pork shoulder, you might be closer to, say, 11 hours. And if you're doing a whole hog, now you're looking at 23 hours.
And the big difference between doing that and just putting an oven on a low temperature and cooking something for a long time is that we're talking about wood being involved here?
You're talking about wood in gently infusing its flavors, almost bathing the meat in a big fog of smoke for as much time as you're doing it there. And the gentle heat is actually breaking down the fibers of the meat. They literally open up over time. And one of the great exciting things, you rarely see this except on the barbecue circuit, is that most great barbecuers, to the degree that they use sauce at all, don't do it till the very, very end. And what they really want to try to do is wait till the fibers have opened up. And if you hit it with the sauce at just that moment, actually a blue smoke rises.
Which, of course, which you've named your barbecue restaurant.
Idealistically.
But that's the other way you'd be marinating everything in the barbecue sauce, and that's what people generally do, and they wind up with...
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter what kind of meat you use or anything. It tastes like Kraft made it.
Exactly.
Well, the great thing also about opening up those fibers is that it's at a position where it can absorb more sauce. You know, it's the you don't want to just slick it the surface with sauce. You want it to sort of incorporate the sauce into the whole experience.
Is this something that mostly Americans do, or can we find barbecue in other parts of the world?
I think there are barbecue traditions all over the world. I know that South Africa has a big barbecue tradition, and you always see, if you go to a barbecue competition, for example, you always see people who have all the pins from all the events worldwide, and South Africa is definitely represented. Australia, New Zealand.
Have you looked into the history of this? Do we know who made the first pulled pork or the first dry rub ribs?
Probably someone who grunted rather than spoke. Yeah. But you know, speaking of speaking, I think one of the things people don't often talk about with barbecue is the reason that its roots are so deep is because it is slow. And when it's slow, it was a way, and it always has been and always will be, a way for people to be with people. And the lore, the stories that get told. If you come to the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party tomorrow, while you're in line for your food, watch the pitmasters. They're talking to each other. They're talking to people who love the food. And they're just talking about life and about how they view cooking. And
now,
it's an anthropological study. It's very exciting.
Until fairly recently, we didn't see much real barbecue in New York. Was that because of city ordinances?
Some people said it was, which was really a barrier for years to open barbecue places. In fact, it wasn't. All you really had to do was either find an incredibly low building that wasn't near a lot of other high buildings, and you know, there are places who have done that, or...
Because the smoke is the major consideration?
Yeah, it's not that it's illegal, but the EPA is very happy to take calls from people who live in the apartment building next door who, you know...
I don't blame them.
Popcorn may be the best smell in the world, but if you have to smell it all day, you're not going to be happy. So one way around it is to make sure that you've got a very tall building and build a chimney so that it's blowing its smoke into the hither and yon.
Before we start tasting some of these things, you're from different parts of the country. Do people get into fights over whether St. Louis is best, as you might claim, Danny, or whether it's Charleston, South Carolina, as you might, Ted, have met?
Absolutely. And I just want to clarify, Ted made it sound like it's one happy wide world of barbecuing, but I think there are specific American styles and obviously specific Southern styles that, you know, people thrill to and are going to be on display tomorrow
and even
are
North
worth checking out.
North versus South Carolina styles.
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
And different parts of South Carolina. Orangeburg, South Carolina has its own style of barbecue sauce with, you know, pickle juice and mayonnaise in it.
Is that something you tell us about in your cookbook?
As a matter of fact, we have a recipe for each of the three different styles of barbecue sauce that you'll find in South Carolina.
And do you find that the one you prefer is the one that you grew up with?
In general, yes.
Yes.
And I think that's how people are with all American food, whether it's tuna fish salad or egg salad or barbecue. It's the one you grew up with. And for me, the bigger arguments are not whether... You know, Texas is better than Memphis, better than Kansas City, but the real arguments take place, I think, within those communities. So, for example,
sure,
you could go to Austin, Texas, around which is the Great Hill Country. There's at least five or six different towns within a 15-minute drive of one another, each of which has a completely different style and is absolutely certain that theirs is the only one that matters.
Well, the Black Party... We'll have local pitmasters. I didn't know there were. I thought they were usually transplants, along with award winners from Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee. Is that it? Nothing.
Well,
no one from Missouri, Danny?
No one from Missouri, and I've got to say, you made a presumption, which I would not agree with, that I think St. Louis is the best barbecue. I don't think it is. I do like a snoot every now and then, but if someone put a gun to my head and said, you got to go to one spot only, I'd probably go to the Hill Country in Texas, followed by Kansas City, followed by Memphis, followed by North Carolina.
Yeah.
So that's what religion I am, guys.
Yeah.
Well, what have you brought to us today for this taste test?
We've got three different tastes of things that really represent from three different pitmasters who will be at the block party Saturday and Sunday. Mike Mills, who is the only person in the world to have won the Memphis and May Grand Championship 3 years, brought his award-winning baby back ribs. And Chris Lilly, who has won the shoulder and butt championship, don't take that the wrong way, three times at Memphis in May, has supplied us with his pulled pork, which is exquisite. And Kenny Callahan from Blue Smoke is doing chicken this year, smoked chicken, and it's a recipe really based on Lockhart, Texas.
Mm. You can smoke anything. You can smoke salmon. You can smoke... Well, I'm not the smoked salmon you get... That's called lox. You can smoke salmon in the way that the pork is smoked, can't you?
Certainly.
So you can smoke things in many different ways. Is it a matter of just what you smoke it in, or the...
You can use different woods. That's exciting, you know, that you could use mesquite. Gives a characteristic sort of Texas flavor and has a sort of piney, resinous quality. And then there's the fruit woods, apple wood, and pear and cherry, and those are really wonderfully exotic smells that have a sweetness to them that people immediately gravitate toward. In fact, I think a lot of restaurants use those woods as a pure aromatherapy. They don't actually have anything smoking back there, but they just, you know, smolder a few applewood chips.
Because it makes people feel good.
It just has this warm fireside aroma, and it also smells like food. You know, wood is a component of a lot of our foods and beverages.
Now, Danny, you've just come around and you've poured something into our dishes for the pulled pork. We just can't eat this stuff by itself?
Well, I actually prefer to not put too much sauce on any of my barbecue. And I think the purists would agree with that.
Yeah.
However, there is a lot of Americans for whom the sauce is the thing. I think one of the things the block party can show you is that the real beauty is in the meat itself. That said, Chris Lilly wanted to supply us with two different sauces from Alabama, and one of the traditions there is this white sauce, which I'll admit I've never taken a cottoning to, no pun intended, but it's a mayonnaise-based sauce. You know, we hear a lot about tomato, mustard, vinegar-based sauces. This is a mayonnaise and white pepper sauce, and a lot of people in the world like opposites. They like something vinegary with fat. He wants fat on his fat.
Fat on fat.
It does have a kind of a tang to it.
Yeah, I think it's got some vinegar in it as well, but a lot of black pepper, which makes it nice.
Well, Matt and Ted, what will you be doing during your extreme southern cooking demonstration tomorrow?
We've basically taken all the white elephant recipes in our book, all the really totally
out there stuff,
out there, really original southern stuff, whether it's something that we came up with, like chocolate grits ice cream, or whether it's something...
Chocolate grits ice cream?
Yeah, chocolate grits ice cream.
I had to repeat that like 60 minutes style, because they always say that in 60 minutes.
Somebody says chocolate grits ice cream.
Did you say chocolate? Anyway, I've never heard of such a thing. Is this something you've invented?
Yeah, that's something we invented, but we also have chocolate grits soufflés
that Eberhard Mueller used to do at Lutèce, strangely enough. Mm-hmm. But I digress. And then we also have...
He's from the southern part of Austria.
blackened potato salad, inspired by our uncle.
And blackened with what?
With a blend of spices, but it's sort of a pan blackening technique. It's like the one thing that came out of that blackening craze in the 80s that actually stuck, at least at our uncle's restaurant. And then boiled peanut soup, fairly esoteric preparation of something that's normally just a snack. And then the coup de grace is the corn cob wine that we brewed up a few weeks ago, and we're going to dole out in little
sample
cups. And
that's a very traditional Southern Tennessee sort of thing, but still, you know, it
well, bourbon comes out of corn.
Yeah, sure.
So is
this
a cousin of bourbon?
It's no. It's I guess you could call it a precursor. But you basically make a corn cob beer. You add a lot of sugar. I mean, it's nothing like the corny beer that Jack Daniel's will make before they distill it. But it's related.
Well, talk about far out, Danny. You'll be hosting a tasting tomorrow called Barbecued Bologna Bourbon and Beer. Now, I have some familiarity with the last two, the bourbon and the beer, but can you explain barbecued bologna?
Well, you got to start by liking bologna, or at least mortadella. But this is one of these weird idiosyncratic ways of expressing how a different region thinks about barbecue. So if you go to Memphis, you will find people on a Friday night or a Saturday night breaking out the bologna. And they take literally an entire long bologna, and they simply score it both ways on the top, put it in the smoker for really no more than about 2 hours or so, and baste it with barbecue sauce. It comes out really tasting yummy. And then you hack off slices that need to be about 3/4 of an inch thick, throw those slices on the grill, and then what they do is they pile those on a bun with coleslaw, more barbecue sauce, and sliced onions and pickles. And it is one of the best sandwiches
sounds
you can
fantastic.
Imagine.
Sounds
so
awesome.
We're going to try that tomorrow at one of the seminars. It's at 6 o'clock, along with Pappy Van Winkle beer and Brooklyn beers, and see what people like better with it.
Now, that's something that you would not find in South Carolina, Matt.
You might. I mean, it's a wild world out there, especially in South Carolina.
When you moved here, and you've been living here, the both of you, for quite a while now, was this a problem for you that there wasn't enough barbecue in New York? Did you find ways
to get
around
it? Around 93 when I graduated from college and sort of moved here, and there wasn't a whole lot of barbecue around that.
There was a place called Pearson's that opened somewhere around then. Before then, there was nothing.
And there was sort of nothing. There were Southern restaurants at the time, but not barbecue. So, I mean, we're really fortunate now to have, you know, people like Danny and Dinosaur and Bone Lick Park, Daisy May, you know, there's just so
Fete
many.
Fete Sau.
Fete Sau, a new place in Williamsburg. It's fantastic.
Well, one of the things that we wanted, every year we've been trying to celebrate all kinds of pitmasters and let New Yorkers see that this is not scary stuff. 2002, 5 short years ago when we opened Blue Smoke, people literally asked me, Danny, do you think people will be willing in New York to throw their tie over their shoulder and pick up food with their fingers? Now you're seeing places all over the place. Tomorrow we'll have...
Of course, New Yorkers don't wear ties to restaurants anymore. 5 years ago, they still were.
That's true. The only one of my restaurants is Blue Smoke. The rest of them, where they you'd think they would, they don't. But tomorrow we'll have John Wheeler from Rack and Soul, way up on the way upper west side. We'll have John Stage from Dinosaur Barbecue on 125th Street. We'll have Robbie Richter from the brand new Hill Country restaurant, which is just opening right off Madison Square Park. So New York is starting to really show its barbecue.
It's a golden
strength.
Era for barbecue in New York.
Because there was
sure.
a time when people were barbecuing elsewhere and then reheating in New York.
Right.
And it just did not taste the same. Reheated barbecue, it's got to come out of the smoker. And, I mean, we're eating it a little far from the time that it was made. But this is all just terrific tasting stuff. Did you just go to the best guys? Is that what happened?
We go to the best guys we can find. As I said, we have award winners from around the country. And I'll tell you one thing. It's a labor of love for these guys to be here. We've got a team led by Brian Bracewell of Southside Market in Elgin, Texas. He brought up a team of 12 people. When you have to truck your smoker up, when your smoker has a license plate, you know it's a big smoker. But this is a week-long commitment for these guys who are coming from these faraway destinations, South Carolina, North Carolina.
But I'm sure that coming to New York and being part of the Big Apple thing has to really be exciting for them.
It's kind of like running the marathon when you have an appreciative crowd the way they will. And I just want to also point out the seminars that we're going to have. And
you have entertainers as well.
We have 6 free hours of music both Saturday and Sunday with jazz, bluegrass, R&B, blues. We've got seminars both days. And you can buy tickets still for the seminars if you go to the Big Apple Barbecue website, which I should know. It's www.bigapple.com. BigAppleBBQ.org, and you can buy tickets till 5 o'clock today, or you can buy them at the event tomorrow and Sunday.
And we should point out that the party is all for the benefit of the Park Conservancy.
Right, to the degree that we have any proceeds after all the expenses of getting these guys here and putting them up, etc., all that money goes to the Madison Square Park Conservancy.
Congratulations are in order in another way. All of you were in this week's New York Times dining section. Matt and Ted wrote the front page story on meatballs. And Danny's restaurant, Gramercy Tavern, got a 3-star review from Frank Bruni. And he said it's better than it's been in a long, long time. Is this a coincidence, or is it all part of a barbecue block party conspiracy?
It's all smoke and mirrors. Thank you.
Well, but that congratulations to all of you.
Thank you very much.
And can you just barbecue in your... Can you just put a smoker out on your fire escape and cook that way?
Sure.
Depends on how well you get along with your upstairs neighbor.
Yeah.
Live on the top floor.
Wouldn't recommend it, but we've tried such stunts before. And there are ways to approximate it at home in your oven. In fact, we've got a recipe in the cookbook for a pork shoulder that you wrap in collard greens. Or actually, you pat it down first with smoked paprika. That's where you get your simulated smoke flavor, and it turns out great. And you could fool a few people with some pulled pork that way. But
I was interested to learn the Fire Department of New York website has great tips on what is legal and what is not. Mm. It's very explicit. So.
The 5th annual Big Apple Barbecue Block Party to benefit the Madison Square Park Conservancy takes place tomorrow and Sunday, June 9th and 10th, from noon to 6 p.m. in Madison Square Park. You can check out our show page at WNYC.org for a link to the official Barbecue Block Party website, where you can find information about the barbecue vendors, the musical performers, the expert seminars, and more. And, of course, about Danny Meyer and about Matt Lee and Ted Lee, whose new cookbook is the Lee Brothers Southern Cookbook, and who will be demonstrating some of the more far-out things from their cookbook. I think that's the best way. You know, if you
extreme
just do the
Southern
safe stuff, then, you know,
New Yorkers have seen it all. So we come to New York, we want to
thank you
it.
So much.
And, thanks, Leonard.
Thank you, Leonard.
We really appreciate the fact that that barbecue has finally made its inroads in New York. The next thing you know, I mean, what comes next? Are there things from other parts, still obscure things from other parts of the country that haven't made inroads in New York?
I'm sure there's tons of them. For example, we'll be featuring a guy who's got a Brunswick stew recipe at the block party. We're also featuring someone with fried pies. So there's lots to explore in real America.
I'll come by for some fried pie.